This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to another edition of the longest running weekly episodic comic book podcast. In all of Place to Be Nation.
I apologize for being out of sync on that one, Greg. You threw me off with your Rocky Johnson noises straight at the top of the show. I was not anticipating them in the first 10 seconds. You got to ease me into the Rocky Johnson. You can't go full soul man right at the top.
I am a soul man. I'm glad you mentioned that, Nick. I am a soul man, as was Rocky Johnson, and that's why we share similar noises on occasion.
Did anyone ever figure out, like, what his ailment was that caused him to just...
Early onset dementia?
I don't know. I don't know. I know it was exceedingly bizarre back when it happened.
Sure.
And I also know that this is another one of those references that I don't think anybody that listens to our podcast, except for me and you, is going to get.
I agree with that, Nick. And do you know how much I care about that?
A small amount.
Not very much.
Yeah.
You are Nick Duke.
Yes.
I am Greg Phillips. We are the Hard Traveling Fanboys. We are here to bring to you today an episode of one of our recurring features, Off the Page.
Yes.
This is where we look at and review pieces of comic book media that are not comic books. This could be TV shows, movies, games, anything under the sun, or moon, or stars for that matter. And in this case, we are kicking off an entire month of special editions of our show, because we are kicking off October with Walking Dead Month. And we are going to start things off by reviewing the Walking Dead video game by Telltale Studios. So this is promising to be a stellar episode of our show. But before we get into all that, I would like to bring the public's attention to a few items of interest.
Oh, God, here. What could this be?
Well, first of all, there's a little institution that two of us earned degrees from.
Yes. Hard work. Dedication. Now we don't want to start any kind of public war with the NBA team podcast, which we narrowly avoided last year when you called them the NBA B team.
That was an unintentional gaffe. But we the two of us earned through hard work and dedication degrees.
Yeah, we sure did, Stevie.
From an institution that did okay over the weekend.
Decent.
Fair.
Not too bad.
Somewhat of a name for itself. So I wanted to bring some attention to that. that was fun. And something else I'd like to bring some attention to is Nick Duke's continual ability to jinx himself. Because last week, I believe
you're... Whoa. You know what? I'm going to let you go ahead.
No, I already know your loophole. I already know your loophole. Nope.
With which to hang yourself.
I already know what your loophole is. Because you said you would go September and O.
And did I do that?
And technically, you did. But did you complete the weekend?
Did I say anything on the podcast last week about completing the weekend? Was that ever anything I said? I said one good Saturday, Greg.
And you know what you are so far right now, Nick? You're 0 for October.
That's true. Something tells me that won't last, though.
which team's going to break it?
Well, I'm not going to. That's quite frankly, that's not for me to say right now.
I'm just saying the Hilton Hulkamaniacs ride at the top may have been temporary and tenuous at best.
That may be true, but I'll tell you this: I'd much rather be 3-1 than 1-3, and that's all I have to say about that.
Well, speaking of cheap shots, I have nothing to follow that with. You know, I thought I could come up with a bridge to tie that back into
just
the main topic.
Just go ahead and say it, Greg. Go ahead and say it. It's going to be one of the new tees on our Pro Wrestling Tees store. That's right. The brand new Nevertheless.
Do you think that we'd get full profits off of our shirt if we put it up on Pro Wrestling Tees?
I'm not really sure how Pro Wrestling Tees works, to be honest. And something tells me that the cost of setting up the store and having the shirts printed – it would probably be cost prohibitive, seeing as how we'd probably only sell like 2 shirts total, and you know I would buy a shirt and you would buy a shirt,
right.
And those would be our 2 shirts that we sold.
And we'd wear them at all public events we went to.
Yeah, we really should have a. I don't even know. I don't even want to think about what the acronym would be for the longest running weekly episodic comic book podcast in all of Place to Be Nation. But we should have an acronym shirt. It's just got that with like a hashtag on the front.
Yep. We could even get a celebrity endorsement maybe from Ho Ho Loon.
Or Gerard Depardieu.
Depardieu.
Todd Weber needs a Como shirt. That's what he needs.
Need to set up a PTBN pot. Now, we don't have the funding to do this, of course.
No, of course not.
We of course, do not make money. But if we were to generate revenue of any kind, we should then use it to invest in a shirt store for each podcast.
Hey, we made we got an Amazon card that one time. That was pretty cool.
I thought that was supposed to be on the down low.
It might as well be. Nobody listens to this show anyway.
That's true, except for the other people on the PTB and Pop channel.
Oh well, hell with them. Well, Todd Weber will take it out in post. The manager.
Ah yes, the manager, Todd Weber, who's done a great job. I think Nick.
He's
really
a great manager.
He's really spiced up our songs. He's given us
our outro song is now among the best in the business, as they say.
With
the inclusions of certain other Place to Be personalities and sound effects from our ultra successful Place to Be Nation Pop Comic Book Theater.
My God, Nick, I hate to interrupt this with going inside baseball, but. As we're recording this podcast, I have a television on mute, and there's a local commercial airing. And do you know who is starring in this local commercial?
Phil Paramore.
Even better. Real estate agent Ronnie Gilley.
Oh, that's awesome. Somewhere, silently, or not so silently, there is a middle-aged man who is celebrating his Ronnie's return to the
way. Good. It's good. Ronnie back.
Is it a commercial for a buffet?
No, it was just a commercial of Ronnie Gilley talking about how great some house is.
Mm.
Very bizarre. Anyway, people don't know who Ronnie Gilley is.
I'm pretty sure any house would be nice to Ronnie Gilley at this point, given his stay in the country.
He was in the jailhouse now.
Well, not anymore. He was in the jailhouse
then. He was in
the
jailhouse then. I told him once or twice to stop playing the cards and a shooting dice. He's in the jailhouse now.
Then he was in the jailhouse. Then.
You want to do the yodel part, Nick?
No, God no. Oh. I'll leave that to David Sunday. We can have that also added in post.
That would require him actually watching that movie again, though.
Yeah, he didn't like. He didn't get it.
Didn't care for it that one night. He tried to watch it. But soon, David, we'll win you over.
There was also a night where David Sunday didn't care for No Holds Barred, Greg. So I have no need.
You know, his opinion. I don't like to hurt your feelings, Nick. But unfortunately, I get a feeling that we are in the minority of people that love No Holds Barred.
That is a blatant lie. That is once again coming from you, and I am not surprised. A bunch of fake news.
I like No Holds Barred. I love it. I love the movie. I'm just saying.
No, that part's true.
When
your assertion that there are others who do not like – I have never encountered a person who doesn't love that film, ever.
Nick.
It is regarded by the general populace as one of the five greatest films ever made.
Nick, you've been hanging out and reading the documents of Jerry McDevitt too long this past week.
No, I haven't. If I had been reading the documents of Jerry McDevitt, I wouldn't even know what a no, a holds, or a barred are, especially if you put them all three together.
You know, Vince McMahon says he's never lost a lawsuit. He said that on the air. And do you know why, Nick?
Because people get frustrated with Jerry McDevitt and
just
give up. You know what? You can keep your millions of dollars. Get me out of here.
Just get me the hell out. I can't handle this guy anymore.
You should get Jerry McDevitt to prosecute your speeding ticket case against the city of Daleville.
Yes. Actually, I should do that. And I should get him to prosecute it, too, whatever that means.
Prosecute, prosecute, who gives a shit?
Prostate it. But speaking of prostates.
Don't prostate it.
Speaking of prostates, prostates are stimulated.
The Sunday Groove, you can currently catch it here on the Place to Be Nation Pop Network.
Prostates are often stimulated when people talk about The Walking Dead.
What? Wait just a minute. I'm going to need you to break that transition down for me.
Well, sometimes when a person, a man or a woman, usually a man, I suppose, likes The Walking Dead very much.
So I would
likes The Walking Dead very much. He might stimulate his prostate during the course of watching an episode or reading a book.
Good Lord. Fair enough, I suppose.
Oh, I don't know. I'm trying to work on my transitions, Nick. It has to get better than nevertheless.
I don't know. Nevertheless is your catchphrase now. It's working for you.
Is it really a catchphrase if we don't have an audience?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, if you say it a lot, so that's kind of like a catchphrase.
In any event, Walking Dead month is kicking off, and we've got a month, as the title would indicate, of activities and games and shows related to The Walking Dead. And we're kicking it off with a look at a game that really took us by storm several years ago. This came out in 2012, and this was really the big cultural arrival of Telltale Games, Telltale Studios, if you will. They had done games before this. They had done a Back to the Future game. They had done a Jurassic Park game. I've played the Jurassic Park game, and it's terrible. This was their real arrival, though. This was their coming out party where they were able to put out a game that was of an extremely high quality. And I don't know about you, Nick, but this was a game that when it came out completely caught me off guard. I downloaded it and bought the first episode on the basis of the I believe they released a free trailer of the first episode, or a demo, rather, and I ended up buying the first episode and loved it so much that I got hooked on it, and it's become one of my favorite game series and really kicked off my love of Telltale Studios.
Yeah, pretty much the same experience. I remember us both, you know, hearing about the fact that there was going to be a game to take advantage of the massive success of The Walking Dead television show to that point. And then, you know, like you said, the demo came out, and then also – I remember just the overwhelmingly great reviews that came out for the first episode of the game, and they spurred me to go ahead and download that first episode. And pretty much immediately after playing it, I went ahead and plunked down the season pass cash, which I have done for pretty much every Telltale game that I've been interested in since then. Just went ahead and prepaid for the season. And I got to be honest, of the ones I've played, I have not been let down yet. I am interested at some point going back and playing some of these others that. You know, even the Jurassic Park game, I know you say it's not great, but I'm somewhat interested in that. The Back to the Future game I'm interested in. At some point, perhaps, you know, I would like to get around to Guardians of the Galaxy. I've heard good things about that.
I just
Wolf
have to
Among
upgrade.
Us, I would like to try out. You know, I know nothing about Game of Thrones, but I would be interested in trying it out just because it's from Telltale. So, you know, you got to do what you got
to
do.
I just have to update my console before I can get to Guardians of the Galaxy. But yes, both The Walking Dead seasons I've played are phenomenal, spoiler alert, And obviously Batman Season 1 was phenomenal. The Wolf Among Us demo that I played was tremendous. So, yeah, I'd like to get my hands on all of those and play through them. But, yeah, this was the one that really announced their arrival. And if you've listened to our episode from a few weeks ago where we reviewed the Batman Telltale game, you kind of know what to expect from this. It is less of a traditional video game than it is kind of an interactive movie or an interactive comic book. And you assume, in this case, the role of Lee Everett. And this is one of the things right out of the gate that makes this game stand out. Lee Everett is an African-American man who is a convict. He is literally a prisoner at the time of the outbreak, when the zombie outbreak occurs. And we should mention as well that this game takes place in the comic book universe of The Walking Dead rather than in the television universe of The Walking Dead.
Right. So, and rather than its, you know, its own unique universe, which was a thing we had thought might be a possibility leading up to it. But yes, very firmly set in the comic book universe, and you even get some cameos from some recognizable characters along the way here in this game.
Absolutely. And so right out of the gate, this game separates itself from other games by having you play as a minority character who is obviously straight out of the gates not a classic good guy. I mean, this is somebody who has been arrested for a crime that we find out later that he did commit. And you're taking over the role of this convict who is basically only free because the bus that he's being transported on as a prisoner happens to wreck in the middle of the outbreak of the zombie apocalypse. So much like every version of The Walking Dead, every version of The Walking Dead has one thing in common, which is that they never reveal to you how or why the outbreak starts. So you're just thrown into it, and you're a person reacting to this craziness. And so he is the main character, and he's voiced by Dave Finoy, in this game. And it's instantly a great, humane voice that sounds like a regular guy and was a huge factor in sucking me into this game when I played the demo, Nick. I instantly cared about Lee. I thought his voice was terrific. I thought the writing for him was good. And the fact that he came off like more of an everyman, even though he was a convict, he came off like more of an everyman than almost any video game character I had played to that point.
Yeah, I mean, one of the big contrasts, you know, if we're going to compare this to the Batman game that we reviewed last month, the big difference here is that with Batman, we know, or at least have some familiarity with a lot of these characters. We come in with a certain amount of buy-in, you know, already invested. We are more likely to be emotionally affected and to be willing to go on this journey with these characters and to be sucked in by it all. Walking Dead does not have that advantage because rather than going for established comic or television show characters, which would have been very easy for them to do and very understandable, they largely choose to create – I mean 95% of the characters that play a role in this game are original creations that we've never seen before. And that works to varying degrees in terms of whether you attach yourself to certain characters or not. But for the most part, the core group, the main core group, are really engaging characters. And it's a really remarkable job by Telltale, not just with casting for Lee and the writing of Lee, but kind of across the board with this cast of characters. It is a remarkable job and among the best examples of storytelling in a video game that I've ever seen.
Absolutely. And as we often talk about, Nick, one of the lost arts in the industry is telling a story, picking a body part and telling a story.
That's right.
And but everything you just said is true. This game, in many ways, is more impressive because it's in an established universe technically, but by and large, they're creating their own world here. Their own world of unique characters, and you know, to use an old phrase, Nick, there's no such thing as good guys versus bad guys. There's a lot of shades of gray in this game. And yes. With the exception being that Lee seems to be genuinely a good person who made a mistake in his past.
Right. You have this weird thing because, like, Lee, who is probably objectively, in terms of his actions anyway, no matter which way you play him, he's pretty much the best person in this game. And yet, because of his past, even he has these extreme shades of gray. Mm-hmm. And along the way, the game forces you to make decisions that are not easy decisions. There are very few black and white, right and wrong decisions in this game. And like you said earlier, being our first exposure to Telltale and this kind of game, some of these choices, looking back on it now, were just really agonizing at the time. I mean, just incredibly difficult choices that really incentivize multiple playthroughs because you really want to see how going the other way affects the game.
Right, and particular attention deserves to go to the writing team here of Sean Vanneman, Mark Darren, and Gary Whitta, who wrote what may be the best Walking Dead story. That's the crazy part of it, Nick. For all the comics, for all the great seasons of the TV show, either this or the second season, you could argue, if you combine them as one giant story, may be the most compelling of all of the Walking Dead stories. I mean, that's pretty exceptional for a video game that presumably didn't have a huge budget and could have easily just been thrown together as a cash grab.
Yeah, I will say this, and I don't want to delve too far into any subject material that we may or may not be covering in the Longbook Hunters this month, but at the very least, this game, to me anyway, is far more engaging and affecting than any of the Walking Dead comics I've read. And I've read about 50 to 55 issues. I think this is a masterclass in story building, really. I mean, as opposed to, in addition to just telling the story, but like I said earlier, they really have to build up equity with each of these characters and get you to invest into this long-form story that they are playing out over the course of, I don't know how much time, Greg, but I guess if you stitched all five episodes together, it's probably at least, I would figure, an 8 to 10 hour experience probably.
Yeah. Yeah, I would say so, yeah. And, you know, it's like, for our wrestling fans out there that may listen to the show, it's somewhat like the Okada and Omega series, where it's a long-form deal, and it's telling a story that plays off of prior decisions made by the primary characters, the Flair, Steamboat, what have you. It's a long-form story that builds and builds and builds and builds, and depending on the decisions that you make in the course of that, as your character, Lee, it's going to affect, even in a minuscule manner, something down the line, whether it be a character interaction or whether it be something far more important, like the ultimate fate of a character.
Greg, not to interrupt you too much, and I don't want to throw us completely off topic because it has nothing to do with this, but I feel like this is something where that your reaction to this piece of breaking news needs to be captured on the air. Would you like to know the main event of NXT TakeOver Houston?
Hold on a second, Nick. I'm trying to...
Don't look it up.
I'm not looking. I'm trying to brace myself. I'm trying to logically think through the fact that there's no way it could possibly involve Enzo Amore.
It doesn't.
This
is going to be a good reaction.
Oh, a good reaction. The main event of NXT TakeOver, where is it?
Houston.
All right, go ahead and tell me.
You're going to have the Undisputed Era of Adam Cole, Kyle O'Reilly, and Bobby Fish taking on the team of the Authors of Pain and Roderick Strong inside the War Games.
Oh, my God. Wow. Ho, ho, wow. That's amazing, Nick. I never thought we'd see the War Games come back. And a six-man War Games at that. It must only be one ring this time.
Don't know. That hasn't been confirmed. I am feeding you the information as I get it. But It is going to be a 6-man War Games match set for NXT TakeOver Houston. So sorry to throw you off. Please continue.
Well, that changes the game, my friend. War Games is back. Submit or surrender. Tony Schiavone somewhere, no selling it, but I'm selling it. I'm excited. Nick, I'm excited. That's good. Good. I'm going to have to catch up on NXT.
Indeed.
I'm
pretty pumped about that now.
Yes, me too. When does that air?
I believe it is Survivor Series weekend, so mid-November, mid to late November, somewhere
remember,
in there.
Remember, mid to late November.
Indeed, indeed.
And another thing that I'm really excited about is eventually playing the third season of The Walking Dead game. But we're here to talk about the first season of The Walking Dead game and what built that attachment. And for me, what built that attachment was, as we mentioned, the tremendous writing across the board in this game, from chapter to chapter, 5 chapters here, each one just continuing to build and build and build, concluding with, and we'll get to that I'm sure later, concluding with one of the most heartbreaking aspects of a video game story that I've ever encountered in my life. That's one thing that I do want to say in general about this game, Nick, is for our audience out there, if you haven't played this, if you haven't downloaded this and played it at some point, when you do, be prepared. don't walk into this, you know, expecting a lighthearted gaming experience, because this game will rip out your heart and stomp on it.
Yes.
It will kick you in the gonads, or the equivalent of gonads.
It will stomp a mud hole in your heart
and walk it dry.
Dry. Yep. And absolutely.
It's tough, man. Lee forms all of these relationships and these bonds with people. And as Lee forms them, so do you, the player.
Right. And because you're kind of driving his decisions. And so you find it forces you really to put yourself in the shoes of the character more so than most, you know, normal third party or third person action adventure games would.
Right. And your decision making, you have to own it. I mean, if a lot of the decisions you make throughout the game ultimately don't make a huge difference, but you don't know when those are going to be, and you don't know when the important ones are going to be. So something you may think is an innocuous decision, you'll make it, and then suddenly a character dies, or a character leaves the group, or a character betrays you, and then you feel ownership of that decision. And you feel like, my gosh, what have I done? You know, like, what happened? What would have happened if I had gone back? And you said this about the Batman game, but I think it's just as true here. I've rarely played a video game of any genre that rewards multiple playthroughs to the degree that these Telltale games do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I would absolutely agree. Like I said earlier, it really makes you want to go back and see how each decision was made. Like, I'll be honest, you know, I played through the first season of the game, and one of the first things I wanted to do, Greg, when I got done, as I said, you know, of all the choices in this game, the one I regret the most, I want to go back immediately, go all the way back to episode one and see if there's any possible way I can just kill that fucking kid from the get-go and save Herschel's son. Because it was very, you know, I had to own that, Greg. I had to own the fact that I let Duck live, that I saved him, Greg.
Yes, and we should be clear that you're talking about Duck and not about Clementine, who
I am talking about Duck. We haven't talked about either of these characters in depth yet, but let me just say, people, Duck is the worst. The dirt fucking worst.
I, as typical with Nick's assessment of children, I disagree. I like Duck. God. I have nothing against Duck.
Oh, God.
Duck, Nick is picking on a clearly no, mentally handicapped child.
He is not.
He is clearly is. He's he clearly stupid. Is.
No, he's just an idiot.
No. Oh my gosh, Nick, that is so offensive.
His own father in the game calls him, and I quote, "not the sharpest knife in the drawer."
Because he's obviously got some sort of affliction.
I don't think so. I disagree.
Or he's been dealt challenges in life. And he's overcoming those challenges. And his real name is Kenny Jr., even though everyone calls him Duck. But that's part of the cast of characters that we meet. Nick's least favorite character, Duck.
I don't know about least favorite character, but he's up there.
We meet Clementine, the aforementioned character who becomes not just the most important character in this game, but one of the most important characters in all of Walking Dead lore, and one of the best characters in all of Walking Dead lore.
I think both you and I had Clementine on our top five Walking Dead characters list last year whenever we did that show with the esteemed Jennifer Smith.
Exactly. And Clementine is a small child who has been left alone by her parents in the midst of this zombie apocalypse. And her babysitter has turned. And Lee happens to stumble upon her. And through the unlikeliest of scenarios, this convict, Lee, is kind of forced into becoming her guardian. Mm-hmm. And almost takes her on as his own daughter and as his shot at redemption. As he tries to raise and guide her through this horrifying situation. And she's a very young girl. So we get to see Clementine go through her growing stages there from her, what is she, like 7 or 8 when this starts? And she's an 8-year-old according to this text I'm reading. And we get to see her grow and see Lee grow into his role of this father figure to the point where when it happens in the story, you start to see where Lee reaches a point where Clementine's safety is more important than his own.
Right.
And it's very heart-wrenching to see. It's very inspirational. It's just a really great example of building characters in a way that most video games don't or can't or won't. And even TV shows and comic books. I agree with what you said about this game is a more engaging story than most of the comics that we've read from The Walking Dead, So, just a tremendous job of building a cast here. But what are your thoughts on Clementine, Nick?
Oh, you know, as I said a minute ago, one of the best characters in all of The Walking Dead lore. Like I said, you and I both had her on our top five characters list, and that's because – and it's difficult here, Greg, because we're really just trying to talk about season one in the show, but it's very difficult to talk about Clementine without including season two. But I will say she is the character almost at this point that you feel the weight of the events that have happened to her more than any. You feel that change in perspective because when Lee meets her in season one, she is very much just a young – a typical young child. She is overwhelmed by what's happening. She doesn't fully understand it. She's terrified. She's alone. And you see over the course of not just season one but subsequent seasons how hard this world is and the effects it can have on a seemingly normal young child. And this game kind of shows you what it must be like to really grow up in that environment. So it's she is just fascinating. Even in season one, like you said, when you're playing as Lee – some of those smaller decisions, like you said, that don't really play major roles in the way the story is moving, but you can kind of see how they are affecting Clementine, like whether or not you're making choices to curse or choices to treat people poorly, and you kind of see Clementine just do little subtle things like curse or not curse her, like wince or wink or just kind of the way her facial expressions are, and you see how all these things that you are doing are affecting her directly. It's just a brilliant piece of subtle storytelling in terms of the Lee and Clementine dynamic.
Absolutely, and it's not just the Lee and Clementine story, although they are the main focal points. We also meet a large cast of characters over the course of this game, and I'll just touch on a few of them here. We meet the aforementioned Duck and his parents, Kenny and Katja. Kenny is a Florida redneck, for lack of a better term. he puts his family first and loves his country, and you know, he's I like Kenny. I think Kenny's an entertaining character. Nick and I diverge on Kenny because he's also prone to emotional mood swings.
So irrational emotional outbursts, yes.
But ultimately, he's got a good heart, and he cares about Lee and Clementine.
While also expecting their unwavering loyalty and their tacit I'm trying to think of the word here. Their assistance in pretty much every decision he makes. If they ever dare to defy him, he treats them like a sullen child.
Dare to defy.
Oh, damn it. There we go. We're going to be getting lots of that in our very near future.
That's right. It's almost time. So we meet them, and we also encounter a group of survivors led by a character we will talk about in a minute, perhaps, Lily. We meet she was on Robins Air Force Base. We meet Larry, her father, who is a blatant racist and a very angry and stern man. We meet Carly, who is a news reporter, and we meet Doug, and a character all of us should be familiar with if we've watched the television show or read the comics, Glenn. The character of Glenn in his comic book iteration is here in the game, at least early on in the first chapter.
As is Herschel.
Yes. We end up meeting Herschel and his son, his family actually, and it leads to, as you mentioned earlier, a pretty unique decision-making process that you have to go through. But it should be mentioned that the Herschel in the game is like the Herschel in the comic, which is nothing really like the Herschel of the TV show.
Right. The Herschel in the comic is much more hard-edged and not as
right.
Not nearly as much of a kindly old advice-giving man as the Herschel of the television
at
show.
At no point in the game does Herschel even offer to let you look at his pasture.
Yeah, they don't look out on the fields and offer wisdom.
You know,
from his many years.
All of that used to be corn cobs back in the day, Rick. Now, look at it. It's desolated. That represents your insides, Rick. You need to let the corn grow inside you, Rick.
What in the world?
Anyway, in any event. So you meet this pretty wide-ranging swath. Oh, I like that. Characters. Later on, you meet some more survivors. Mark, Ben, who I'm sure you have some thoughts on, who's a high school student that's rescued by Lee, Mark, and Kenny. And
pretty much, for the most part, Greg, if a character in this game is under the age of 18 and their name is not Clementine, they fucking suck.
Good point. And then in the third episode, you meet Chuck. I don't know what your thoughts were on Chuck, but he's a homeless man who lives
Chuck.
In a boxcar and plays guitar.
He plays the guitar.
Yes, and he's entertaining. You also meet Omid and Krista. Omid and Krista.
Good with Omid. Fuck Krista.
Yeah, Krista's...
Krista's a hormonal bitch, is what she is.
She's not now. She's not as hormonal as the lady in the second episode. That
God, that's in the second season.
Yeah, second season. Yeah,
yeah. The Walking Dead does not have very positive depictions of pregnant women. Let me put it that way.
Yeah, pregnant. But one might argue, Nick. Well, I'm not going to touch that. You have more familiarity with that about the mood swings of pregnant women, but.
I wouldn't know anything about that at all, Greg.
No.
You'll do well to stay out of my private affairs.
Basically you're meeting a whole bunch of these characters. And every episode introduces brand new characters, some of whom are innocuous, some of whom are really cool, some of whom are annoying, and some of whom are just downright creepy. Including a group of hillbillies who, well, Nick, they well, they have a little bit in common with certain serial killers in movies played by certain British actors.
But they prefer sweet tea and turnip greens to their fava beans and Chianti.
Oh, my goodness. And so, you have to deal with concepts in this game, such as fatherhood, concepts such as survival, concepts such as cannibalism.
Cannibalism, yep.
So, there's a lot going on here. But what are some of the characters that stood out to you in the game, Nick, positively or negatively?
Man, there are so many. You know, I wound up really liking, what was the character's name, Greg?
Which one?
The one that Lee was clearly going to sex up.
Oh, Carly, yes.
Carly
and Lee is an amazing relationship. Really, really cool. I was very invested in that for many reasons.
Yeah. Liked Carly, liked Chuck, obviously. Liked Katja. I had some mixed feelings on Kenny, as we discussed. I thought Duck was among the most annoying creations in pop culture history.
Good Lord.
Ben is among the most useless creations in pop culture history.
I would agree. Ben's way worse than Duck.
They're each their own special kind of shut the fuck up, is the way I would term it. Lily and Larry, both overbearing assholes, and so I took great pleasure in their respective demises, honestly. Especially after the actions that Lily takes in the game. I don't know how deep we're gonna
delve too much into spoilers here. I will say that Larry is an unrepentant racist, and yet I still ended up hating Lily even more.
Yes, especially given how things play out for each of them. Lily does something in the game that is honestly probably one of the most infuriating and despicable things that anybody in the game does. Trying to think of other characters that come along. Wound up really liking, like I said, Chuck. What was the name of the chick who was in the one episode before she just disappeared? She had she was like the parkour chick that had the hook, you know, and she used it to swing up onto fire escapes and stuff.
Oh yeah. Are you sure that was in the first episode?
First season, rather. Yes.
Yeah, Molly was her name.
Molly, yes, I liked yep. Molly. I liked Molly a pretty yep. good deal. Really, Doug. Honestly, I think that fourth episode where you finally make it to Savannah and you are exploring the ruins of the civilizations and stuff that have clearly fallen in the wake of the zombie apocalypse. I think that fourth episode is probably my favorite of the entire season. Five is great as well.
Yep.
Don't make no mistake about that. Two is great, of course. Honestly, what's crazy is after I was hooked so much by episode one, now that I go back and look at it, one is probably the weakest of the five episodes.
Yeah, I would agree with that because it's all set up. It's all
– Yeah, right.
You know, you're setting up the cast of characters, that and the other. But it's still very strong. And
No doubt.
And I agree, though. I actually think this one gets almost better with each successive episode. And like you said, four and five are the absolute pinnacles. I, too, give the slight edge to four as my favorite episode because it also answers some of the lingering questions that I've always had about The Walking Dead. Like, why doesn't someone try to get a boat? Why doesn't someone try to get to the coast and get off the mainland and go to an island? All of that is explored here. Every bit of that is explored here. And
it also has one of the greatest shock endings in video game history, I would argue.
And it introduces you, as The Walking Dead often does in the comics, on the TV show, and elsewhere, to the ultimate and inherent selfishness and self-centeredness of most people in the decisions that are made in Savannah by the survivors that you encounter there. Ultimately, when push comes to shove, people will choose themselves before they'll choose someone else. So it's just a delightful and a heartbreaking and a not an uplifting game by any means. But it, on the other hand, I say that, and I don't mean that as a negative, because while the events are depressing, the characters are uplifting, the characters are inspirational, And it has a phenomenal cliffhanger ending, Nick.
It does. Among the best cliffhangers I've ever seen. Genuinely shocking. Left you wondering how the hell you were going to get out of it. And the truth of it is, you're not going to get out of it. And that is what makes Episode 5 one of the most tense and heartbreaking and just amazing experiences I've had playing the last – it's one of the best conclusions to a video game story that I've encountered. It is just incredible. And it is, as we said earlier, you better bring the Kleenex. I don't mean the happy Kleenex. I mean the sad Kleenex.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Unfortunately, you don't have many opportunities for the happy Kleenex.
No.
But yes.
If you use the happy Kleenex while playing this game, I would like to – you might need to have – seek a mental health professional would be my advice.
You might be a redneck.
You might be a psychopath.
If you think you're – anyway. We come from the South, folks, so we've also watched a lot of Jeff Foxworthy over the years.
There was a time, Greg, when we all thought he was funny, and we apologize for that.
Absolutely, it's our fault.
We have been trying to make amends ever
since. It's really
go back and take it away.
It's really our parents' generation's fault. But
that's, I guess, Larry the Cable Guy is the one that our generation has to own.
Oh God. At least I'll give Foxworthy this. He's way better than Larry.
Agreed.
Be it Larry the Cable Guy, Larry from the Walking Dead game, or Larry Culpepper. That bastard Larry Culpepper that I can't avoid.
They haven't given this guy a name, but I will take Larry Culpepper over Ice Cold Bud Light here guy every day, every time, Greg. Every time. I've only seen that damn Bud Light commercial like 4 times, and I already want to like incinerate every copy in existence.
Well, much like our alma mater, sometimes you just have to get down the fiddle and get down the bow, kick off the shoes and throw them on the flow.
Man.
Dance. Oof. Oh, what's the word?
Dance in the kitchen till the morning
light. Yep.
Finish it, Greg.
Louisiana Saturday night.
And you are just... I don't know if Andrew Reich ever listens to our show, but you are poking the bear, my friend.
I am not. I mainly just wanted to find a way to transition into a reference to that song, Nick.
Uh-huh.
Thank you very much.
Uh-huh.
Because of our mutual love of old corny country songs.
True. Mel McDaniel, for God's sake.
Mel McDaniel. He was also famous for one of my favorite awesome country songs. That's corny, admittedly, which is Lord Have Mercy, Baby's Got Her Blue Jeans On.
Yep.
If that song doesn't sum up America in the early 80s, I don't know what song does.
I don't either. Some would argue it would be Born to Run.
No.
But that's just
– No.
That's just some people's opinions.
No. No, there's no other song. In fact, I would say it describes not just life in the early 80s, but life in general. It can apply to any time. It's timeless.
Now I want to hear my uncle do a karaoke cover of Baby's Got Her Blue Jeans On.
Nobody wants to hear your uncle do a karaoke cover of anything, for the record.
I'm going to go ahead and just have to disagree with you there.
Maybe instead we could get him to just whistle repeatedly for for about 2 hours.
He's a good man.
He's a good man. I like your uncle. He's a great guy. But man alive, that whistle was like what I imagine it sounds like when Black Bolt talks.
Oh, that whistle is what the sounds of forever, the Superman's dolphin sounded like.
Oh, that's how he defeats Darkseid and wins the final crisis. Oh, Lord Almighty. What we're getting at, folks, is that Season 1 of The Walking Dead game by Telltale is a rousing success.
Rousing, yes.
We love it. We think you'll love it if you download it and play it. There are some kinks here and there with the gameplay. It's not, you know, smooth at all times, and it can be challenging in a couple of places. But for the most part, it's all about the storytelling. And the storytelling in this game is untouchable. And the voice acting, I want to also throw some love to Melissa Hutchison, who is an adult who does a great job of voicing young Clementine. Gavin Hammond, who voices Kenny, does a great job. There's just a great voice cast here, wonderful writing, excellent directing, and a game that will, at least I think, a game that will make you instantly interested in playing through Season 2, Season 3, and all of the related tie-ins to the game. We should mention also that there is an addendum, if you will, to Season 1 of The Walking Dead called, 100 Days Later, Nick?
400 days.
400 days, yeah. Mm-hmm. And it's also really good, even if it's arguably not as essential to Season 2 as it leads you to believe. It's a entertaining game.
The only thing that it really affects is it will affect certain whether certain supporting characters in Season 2 are present as opposed to other certain supporting characters. But in terms of the main narrative, it has no real effect.
Very good.
That I've been able to discern anyway.
Right.
I mean, only the presence of certain characters as really just background and filler. That's the only thing I can come up with. But
it
I will say it's a fun little interlude and worth your time. If you check out the first season of Walking Dead and you like it, I would suggest, you know, playing 400 days. It's it also lends itself to a little bit of a shorter gameplay experience rather than – because my experience with these, Greg, and I don't know about you, but when I start an episode, I want to see it through its conclusion. I want to sit down and play the whole two-hour thing, you know, in one sitting. And with 400 days, it more naturally breaks it up into like 20-minute, you know, gameplay chunks.
Yes, I agree with you on that. And another thing that this game does is there is a contingent of Walking Dead people who complain about the television show not being enough about the zombies. And mm-hmm. while this one is very much just as much about the humans as the show is, it also arguably refocuses you on how terrifying the concept of zombies is. Because
at no point does a – well, I guess towards the end it – you know, you have a primary human antagonist, but these zombies as the primary physical threat are ever present.
Absolutely. You can't ever –
they're never overshadowed by any evil group or evil, you know, antagonist or anything like that. It is the zombies primarily.
And much like in the first and second seasons of the Walking Dead TV show, there's this feeling that every innocuous activity that you do, brings the risk of a zombie popping up out of nowhere and attacking you. Mm-hmm. And you see that with the walkers throughout this game. So basically, if you have any interest in the genre at all, download this game. Even if you don't like the comic, even if you don't like the show, we think you'll like this game.
Absolutely. Agreed wholeheartedly.
Now, have you played the game? Do you agree with us? Do you disagree with us? Let us know. Contact us on social media. I am at gphillips8652. He is at nickduke87. Drop us a line on our loneliest email addresses on the internet. Greg P. at placetobenation.com. Nick D. at placetobenation.com. Or even better, join the Place to Be Nation Comics Facebook page. Just type in Place to Be Nation Comics in your search bar on Facebook. We should come up. Join. We'll let you in. It'll be a great time. We'll have some discussions. We'll have some fun. We'll break bread. We'll dance the Batutsi. It'll be great. Now, when we come back on the other side of this commercial break, we will have for you reading, watching, and the rundown. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
Promotional consideration paid for by the following.
Hey, pro wrestling announcer Kevin Kelly here. I want to make sure you are all subscribed to all the great feeds here at Place to Be Nation. It's really easy to do. Just head to iTunes or your preferred podcatcher app today and search and subscribe to the Place to Be Nation wrestling feed, which, of course, includes the full archives of the Kevin Kelly Show, the Place to Be Nation pod feed, and the Pro Wrestling Only feed. Subscribe, listen, and then rate us and leave feedback today. And be sure to give Justin your true thoughts. I mean, don't hold back. After all, he is kind of a jerk. Just listen to Scott.
Place to Be Nation's JT Rizzero and Chad Campbell here. We want to let you know that we have a ton of great podcasts available to you on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, and PlayStation.com, and we offer those to you on three great feeds. On the Place to Be Nation wrestling feed, we bring you the Mothership, the original Place to Be podcast, as well as Main Event, Lucha Afterground, and our monthly pay-per-view reaction shows, as well as the Our Vantage Point podcast and Jeff Learns Wrestling. In addition to these full-length shows, we also deliver quick-hit pod blasts on topics old and new.
Over on the Pro Wrestling Only feed, we dive deep inside the wrestling business with a stacked army of experts leading the way. The feed features potpourri shows such as This Week in Wrestling, Greetings from Allentown, Psychology is Dead, Puro Potpourri, Stacy and Elliot's Bogus Journey, and the Military Industrial Suplex. We also have shows that focus intently on certain topics like Letters from Center Stage, Space City, and NWA Classics On Demand Adventure, Through the Years, Strong Style History, Strong Style Story, and Mount Olympus. Plus, the feed has the full archives of legendary shows like Titans of Wrestling, Where the Big Boys Play, Letters from Kayfabe, and much more. And on our popular Place to Be Nation Pop podcast feed, we offer such great shows as the Glenn Butler Podcast Hour Spectacular, Rank and File, PTBN Dadcast, Go Home in a Box, NBA Team, and Lucha Undead, as well as a veritable podcast heaven for comics fans with the hard-traveling Fanboys, Sellers Points, Todd Weber's Conversation, Geek and Sassy, and Imaginary Stories podcasts.
You can find all of these current shows plus archives of our past podcasts, including The Kevin Kelly Show, as well by subscribing to all of our feeds on iTunes. And while there, be sure to rate and leave feedback as well. All of these shows plus others available on PlacementNation.com, where we cover pro wrestling, sports, movies, comics, plus in-depth stretch projects and more. Be sure to support our site by using PlacementNation.com/Amazon when shopping online and download our free PTB Vintage Vault Refresh ebooks via the links on our site. We also want to thank our friends at Bonehead's Wing Bar in West Warwick, Rhode Island and Fall River, Massachusetts, TheHistoryOfWrestling.com, and Scott Keats Blog of Doom. Be sure to follow us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and Tumblr as well. PlacementNation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
Respite from our nonsense, but we've got more to spew your way. Nick, you're a fan of spewing, correct?
I am a fan of spewing, and I'm a fan of nonsense. And I'll tell you, one of the biggest loads of nonsense I've heard in recent memory was Greg Phillips casting aspersions on the good goddamn name of the Oak Ridge Boys during the break.
Oh my God, the Oak Ridge Boys. The Oak Ridge Boys.
Listen here. If you and I are gonna talk about our mutual love of old country music on this show, like we do all the time, yes, I'm gonna die on the hill of the Oak Ridge Boys. Elvira, Greg. Elvira, for God's sake.
I don't even listen to the Oak Ridge Boys unless it's the original version of the Oak Ridge Boys. Wally Fowler at the Georgia Clodhoppers. They just all sounded the same. All their songs sound the same. Every Oak Ridge Boys song is the exact same as every other Oak Ridge Boys song.
But it's got that guy with the bass. The bass
it does. Giddy up. Oh, bop, bop, bow, bow.
Yes.
Yeah, it does have that. That's a great. You're starting to sway me now.
On fire for Elvira.
You're really starting to sway me now. I don't know. I want that guy to get together with the bass singer in the Temptations and do a record together.
I want him to get together with that, oh God, I don't even know the name of the person. But you know that, you know the song "Stay Just a Little Bit Longer."
I'll let you stay.
I want him to get together with that person and see what the vocal.
Is it Frankie Valli?
I don't know, man.
Oh, God Almighty! Talk about the, some interesting harmonies. Why don't you just throw Barry Gibb in there while you're at it? Well,
we digress.
We do digress, as we often do. We are going to get to our regularly scheduled programs here. And we're going to start it out with our usual, which is reading and watching.
Reading and watching. What you be reading and watching?
What you been reading and watching?
And indeed, it's time for reading and watching. Watching-wise, I don't know that I've watched anything comic book related, Nick. Have you? Did you get to watch Inhumans?
I did not get to watch Inhumans, but we are promising an adaptation of that, a review of that for the podcast, possibly in full length form, sooner rather than later. I don't know when, but before the end of this year, we are promising you we're going to have some pretty cool Inhumans related material coming your way.
That's right. Now, and keep in mind, all you Inhumans fans out there, I am well aware of what Nick said about them last week, that the characters are uninteresting, so by their very nature. So all hate mail for now can be directed to Nick until that episode.
After all the things you said about him over the more than a year we've been doing this
until
show.
That,
and I say one thing, until and you instantly want to throw me under the Inhumans.
Until that episode airs,
shouted down
that
by fans. So yeah, I'll
episode
own it. Suck. And you know who else sucks?
Airs.
Reed Richards. He sucks too.
He does suck. You're right. Reed Richards does suck.
And Ultimate Reed Richards is awesome, though. I stand by that.
When the episode airs, then you can direct your hate mail to both of us, and probably more so me, because my take will probably be even stronger than Nick's, I'm assuming.
Yeah, because I'll probably walk out of whenever we watch it. I'm sure I will walk out of it enjoying myself in some way, shape, form, or fashion. Not the way the showrunner and show creators intended, in all likelihood, but I'll likely be softer on it because I'll be amused by it.
Call it the Batman and Robin effect.
It is. Yeah, absolutely.
Not to be confused with the Batman Forever effect.
No. There is no confusion between those two effects.
So I haven't watched anything comic book related. I don't think you have. So.
I'm trying to think. No, not that I can think of, no.
The answer is no. So with that being said, we'll move right on to reading. And mm-hmm. As typical, I've gone back into my normal reading habits. I've only read two comic books this
hey,
week.
Hey, we got me beat by two because I went back into my football season reading habits, and I've read no comic books. So there you are.
Well, I feel privileged and honored, and I am just going to review them. And it's the same title. It's Deathstroke. 13 and 14 – I'm sorry, 12 and 13, which is kicking off the storyline Twilight and continues. Just one of my most enjoyable, favorite comic books on the market. And again, I'm months behind, so it could have taken a huge drop in quality since then for all I know. But all I know is 12 and 13 are terrific comic books. The intrigue, the drama. These comics, by the way, are both written by Christopher Priest and drawn by Joe Bennett. And 12 has the layouts done by comics legend Larry Hama, I believe, if I'm not mistaken. Just a tremendous... story continuing to unfold here as I feel comfortable, very, very comfortable after reading the conclusion, or not the conclusion, but after reading part two, which is issue 13, I feel comfortable saying that the Wilson family is the most dysfunctional in mainstream comics. Yes, more dysfunctional than the Magneto family, more dysfunctional even than the Darkseid family. The Wilson family, because
now I don't know, man. Does Slade murder his children and then bring him back to life begrudgingly?
Well, Slade's deaf mute son Jericho. I don't know if he's deaf, but his mute son Jericho murders his male lover to keep him secret from his woman fiance, who, as it turns out on the last page of issue 13, spoiler alert, is sleeping with his father, Deathstroke, behind his back.
Good Lord.
It's awesome. I don't know who is pulling whose strings here. It's just great stuff. The exploration of Jericho's psyche is out of this world great. Christopher Priest does a great job of illustrating how unsure he is of himself and everything around him. The continuing journey of Rose Wilson, how she's trying to get out of all this and keeps getting drawn back in. Slade Wilson and his inability to actually express his feelings in a way that normal humans do, and instead tries to show his love for his daughter by putting a hit out on her and then stopping the hit from happening. There's just so much great stuff going on here. I can't wait to see where it all goes. One of my favorite comics on the stand and is completely safe on my pull list for now.
Good to hear.
And other than that, I got nothing. That's the end of reading and watching. Not much to it this week. So we're going to move on to our weekly look at the news and notes in the comic book world. We're going to move on to...
Welcome to the Rundown.
Speaking of the Rundown, Nick, there's a lot going on. There's just a lot going on, and I figure, why not start out in our most favorite of places, Nick? Do you know what that place is? What that location is?
Well, I think if it were a certain area of a room, it would be an area where two walls meet.
That's exactly right, because we're ready to venture into the DCEU corner.
DCEU corner.
Which, appropriately enough, is located in our L-shaped studio.
Mm-hmm. In Hoholoon Plaza, in beautiful and serene Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada.
Indeed so. And where we're starting is the news this week. There was an interview with Danny Elfman, the legendary composer who is... creating the score for the Justice League movie. And he did a revealing interview with Billboard where he talked about some little fan moments that he's throwing into the music of the film. And he says, I'm just going to read the quote to you. There are a few little fan moments. I instated a moment of the Wonder Woman theme that Hans Zimmer did for Batman versus Superman. But I also had 2 minutes where I had the pleasure of saying, let's do John Williams Superman. And that, for me, was heaven, because now I have a melody to twist, and I'm using it in an actually very dark way, in a dark moment. It's the kind of thing that some fans will notice, some won't. It's a moment where we're really not sure whose side he's on. So this is a pretty cool deal, Nick, because we're getting the classic, legendary Superman theme in this movie, at least in some variation or another.
Yeah, it is. It is interesting. You know, I don't really know how much to read into this. It could just be a cool little nod, but it should at least, you know, be something that's appreciated by those fans who still clamor for the days of Richard Donner and 1978 when it comes to their Superman film adaptations. So at least you'll be getting that score or a snippet of it one more time. My question is, are we going to get any, you know, since it is Danny Elfman, are we going to get any 1989 Batman score snuck in here? Or perhaps maybe a little bat dance.
He doesn't talk about either of those, but he does talk about – and this is where I think it's very interesting because I agree with him on this. Why change the Superman theme if it's so iconic? Why is there a reason to change it? He says, quote, the people at DC are starting to understand we've got these iconic bits from our past, and that's part of us. That's part of our heritage. We shouldn't run away from that. Contemporary thinking is every time they reboot something, you have to start completely from scratch, which, of course, the audience will tell us again and again is bullshit, because the single most surviving and loved theme in the world is Star Wars, which they had the good sense to not dump for the reboots. Small aside, they're not reboots, but nevertheless. And every time it comes back, the audience goes crazy, end quote. Which, I mean, it's hard to argue with that, Nick. I mean, some of these things are iconic for a reason.
Yeah, absolutely. I would say that I don't think there needs to be a hard and fast rule when it comes to these sorts of things. I think it really depends on the director. If Joss Whedon or Zack Snyder is looking for a taste of that iconic score, then by all means use it. But at the same time, nobody should feel beholden to these elements as well. If you want to go off and have a composer create an entirely new score, by all means. But don't feel like you can't use the classic John Williams 78 Superman score or the Danny Elfman 89 Batman score, for that matter.
Or Bat Dance.
Or Bat Dance. Or Party Man.
Oh, Party Man's a good one. I like Party Man.
Or Trust.
Go ahead and say it, Nate. Go ahead and tell us your favorite line.
I'm not going to say it.
No, say it. I think you should say it. You didn't even give us a telltale in this episode. You have to at least give us the line.
What line? I really don't know.
The Trust
hubba,
line.
Hubba hubba, who do you trust?
Yes, that's the one.
Hubba hubba line, hubba.
Who do you trust? Well, who I trust, for the most part, is NetherRealm Studios, the makers of Injustice and Injustice.
You are constantly blasting Ed Boon.
I do, and I blast Ed Boon.
You are an anti-Boonite.
I am not an anti-Boonite. I have had some criticism from Mr. Boon and from NetherRealm for one specific thing, Nick. Not the quality of their video games.
Fascination, as you put it, with putting Mortal Kombat characters in it.
Absolutely, and I stand by it. Now, that being said, I do overall support the studio and enjoy their games. And they have released a trailer for the latest character in Injustice 2 that will be released via DLC. And it is a legendary DC character, the Atom. But not the Atom that you may see on DC's Legends of Tomorrow, Ray Palmer. Instead, this is the current iteration of the Atom, Ryan Choi. And according to the biography that has been released with the character, he is on the search for his mentor, the original Atom, Ray Palmer, which is, as anyone knows who's reading the comics right now, an ongoing storyline in DC Rebirth. So this really marks the first time that we've seen Rebirth crossover into the Injustice world, as opposed to some of the more new 52 inspired designs and whatnot. I watched the trailer, Nick, and looks like an awesome character to play as.
Yeah, it looks like. I mean, you know, so many of these DLCs for even for the first game, were cool, and it was cool to get to play some of these characters, but they kind of played similar to other characters already in the game. This Atom trailer looks completely unlike any other character. It looks like a totally new gameplay experience, and so I am actually really excited to get my hands on this and give it a test drive, so to speak. You know, I may wind up being terrible with the character, but it looks like a ton of fun to try out.
And, you know, this thought just crossed my mind, Nick. How did we not get an amalgam character that was called Atom Warlock?
I don't. Do we know for sure that we didn't? Let's not act like you and I have encyclopedic knowledge of the
amalgam universe. No, we don't. Yeah. But I just feel like that would have written itself. I mean, Atom Warlock, and he guards the Infinity Stones, and he's small. I mean, come on, got a mullet. It makes sense.
It does.
That notwithstanding.
Nevertheless.
Romp'em stomp'em affair. Let us transition from video games onto the printed page.
Absolutely.
And let's talk about one of our favorite creator pairings in all of comics.
Let's do that.
Jeff Lemire and Andrea Sorrentino. They are known, of course, for their historic runs on Green Arrow and then Old Man Logan. And they have recently announced that they are teaming up for a third collaboration. And this time it's going to be a creator-owned comic for Image called Gideon Falls. It is described as a rural mystery and urban horror. It's scheduled to launch in March of 2018. And here is the description. In Gideon Falls, the lives of a reclusive young man obsessed with a conspiracy in the city's trash and a washed-up Catholic priest arriving in a small town full of dark secrets become intertwined around the mysterious legend of the Black Barn, an otherworldly building that is alleged to have appeared in both the city and the small town throughout history, bringing death and madness in its wake. So, obviously, Nick, and Sorrentino and Lemire are magic together. Are you interested in this project of theirs?
Oh, for sure. Anytime you get these two guys together, I'm certainly interested. I don't know that I will follow it as a monthly, but given the fact that Image puts out their trades really fast and really cheap, this is one of the few books I can say that I'm going to trade weight and probably actually mean it. I say I'm going to trade weight a lot of books and then never go get the trade. This one, pretty much, I'm probably going to pre-order that trade and have it waiting on me day one it comes out, because this sounds awesome. The pairing is, of course, we know what kind of work we can expect from them. And, you know, it provides them the opportunity with a creator-owned title to tell stories in a way that the big two don't necessarily allow them to do. You know, something a little bit more gritty, a little bit more hard-edged, and a little bit more violent, I would probably imagine. So I am all in on this for sure.
Totally, totally. Although you could, instead of that book, Nick, when it comes out, you could take your $10 and instead of buying that trade, I'm looking at it right now on Amazon, you could buy the book On the Road with the Oak Ridge Boys, 40 Years of Untold Stories and Adventures by Joseph S. Bonsall.
That sounds good.
It's $8.93 right now on Amazon.
I might just do that, Greg.
Well, one thing that we know about Sorrentino and Lemire is they did great work on the character Old Man Logan. We've even reviewed their work on Old Man Logan right here on the Hard Traveling Fanboys podcast. But that character has been so successful and so popular that we're even getting a new spinoff comic based on his sidekick from the original Old Man Logan story that was written by Mark Miller and drawn by Steve McNiven. And that character is Old Man Hawkeye. Anyone that's read Old Man Logan knows that the fate of Hawkeye in that story would lead one to wonder, how could you do a story about him? Well, it's simple. They're going to do that old standby, a prequel. This is going to be writer Ethan Sachs and artist Marco Cicchetto, and it will follow Clint Barton 5 years before the events of the original Old Man Logan story. Quote, in this story, Hawkeye is losing his vision, and that sort of forces him to confront something really horrible that happened to him personally 45 years ago and go on his own hero's journey while he still can. It's very much like a ticking clock that's forcing him into action. So, Old Man Hawkeye, I gotta be honest with you, Nick, I don't know anything about this creative team.
Yeah, that's the only part of it that gives me any pause, the fact that I recognize nothing about the creative team. But after how much I enjoyed Hawkeye and whenever we did our review of Old Man Logan way back when, this sounds awesome to me.
Yeah, Hawkeye was one of the standout characters in that book. I really enjoyed the way Miller wrote him, and you know, I'm down for the concept. It sounds cool to me. So we'll see. When does that hit the shelves? I'm trying to find that right now. That
it says 2018 is all I can.
Sometime in 2018. Oh, it says, yep. Old Man Hawkeye number one is scheduled to be released in January. So look forward to that, ladies and gentlemen.
Sometime. I don't know when exactly sometime is, but sometime in 2018 it's going to happen.
January. January is the answer, Nick.
January. All right, sweet.
January. I must have cut out on you there for a moment.
You did. You did cut out. You cut out me there for a minute. So.
Nevertheless, Marvel also has announced two new X-Men related titles.
Yes.
Coming in 2018. One of them is no real surprise based on the success of the television show. Legion is coming back. And
good Lord, that hair is awesome.
And with it, he is bringing back his old 90s hair.
Oh.
Legion's hair is just...
Kid, it is an entity unto itself.
It's like Kid and Play and Guile had sex and the child was put on a steady diet of steroids.
I would love to know, Greg, what Legion's hair would look like if he were ever to become a Super Saiyan.
My God. The world may never know.
Well, it's unlikely to know, I would assume.
Well, you could pitch it. Maybe when we do the biennial Place to Be Nation comic book fantasy.
Peter David Memorial Fantasy Comics Draft presented by a hypothetical online DC Comics Unlimited subscription streaming service. I'm pretty sure I botched it myself.
Yes, you did.
I know that.
But nevertheless,
I've got a year to dust up on that. Don't worry about
it. Exactly. And oh, folks, if you don't know what we're talking about, just you wait. So Legion is coming out with a comic book, and that's all well and good. Whatever.
Yeah, no creative theme, no plot announced thus far.
The show is really good. We'll see if the comic can follow up on it. On the other hand, Rogue and Gambit.
Yes.
Yes. Not Rogue and Gambit comics, but one title, Rogue and Gambit. Yes. They're bringing the two classic 90s lovers together, and they're getting their own title. And I am excited. You throw all the 90s X-Men nostalgia at me, and I will eat it up.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. I'm fully on board with this. You know, I'm not as big of an X-Men aficionado as you are, but being a big fan of the animated series, you know, the Rogue and Gambit dynamic was always one that I enjoyed. And I think it's good for these two characters to have their own solo title. I mean, if we're going to have this expanded line of X titles, why not a Rogue and Gambit title? I know certain other Place to Be Nation pop contributors might disagree with the need for a Gambit solo title, but I'm all for it. Bring it on, because I'm ready for it.
Are you suggesting that some out there in the Place to Be Nation could be anti-Gambites?
I am not suggesting. I am outright saying there are anti-Gambites in our ranks.
Wow, anti-Gambites. Mm-hmm. We may need to put together an anti-Gambite commission to investigate these treasonous allegations.
Would we be the anti-Gambite commission, or would we be the anti-Gambite commission?
Wouldn't it be easier to just call ourselves the pro-Gambite?
Or just the Gambite commission.
We sound like the Gambite Commission sounds more like a crime family than it does an investigative body.
What about the Gumbite Commission?
What about the Gambino crime family? Mm. John Travolta playing John Gotti, by the way.
That's going to be interesting. That's going to be interesting.
One thing that's also interesting, Nick.
What's that?
Are you aware, as we've talked about on the show before, but do you remember there's a film coming out about the character of Venom?
I do remember that.
And
we were convinced it was a bad idea, and then we came around to thinking it has a chance.
Well, there's a twist.
A twist?
A twist on the situation.
Oh.
Sony's Venom picture has a screenwriter.
Mm.
This could be interesting, Nick.
Oh.
Actor-turned-screenwriter Kelly Marcel has come on board to write a new draft of the Venom script, according to Variety. The initial draft was written by Scott Rosenberg and Jeff Pinkner.
Now, all right.
Nick, have you ever heard of Kelly Marcel?
I have not, though I am aware of the
Well, let me get there.
All right.
Kelly Marcel is best known, according to this here article, for writing the screenplay to the film 50 Shades of Grey.
A film I have not seen.
Nor have I.
Yep. Yeah.
And is a business
card. Let me put it to you like this. It's a film that I am not against seeing one day. I'll put it that way.
Who is the lead in that?
Oh, Dakota Johnson?
Never heard.
Question mark?
Never heard of her. in any event,
she's bona fide.
Kelly Marcel is also a business partner of Tom Hardy, who is playing the breastular character Venom.
And I would have to think that's why this happened, right? Like,
most likely.
I mean, she's only got 50 Shades of Grey, and I think, what is it, that Mary Poppins biopic?
Saving Mr. Banks.
Mr. Banks.
And she also wrote the and created the TV series Terra Nova, which I never watched but wanted to.
No, nor did I. I thought was that the one James Cameron was involved in somehow?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, I mean, I was intrigued by that. So, yeah, I mean, 50 Shades of Grey, here's the thing. It was an adapted screenplay. So, yes, she ultimately has to take credit for it, but there's only so much lipstick she could put on that pig, you know? So I don't know if she's a good writer or not a good writer. What I will say is I would assume that her getting the job has something to do with the Tom Hardy connection, and whoever you're getting to write the screenplay, I say it's worth it to have Tom Hardy's involvement. That his involvement brought credibility to this project at a time where you and I considered it to have very little to no credibility. So I'm trying to overreact to this unfortunate bit of news.
An excellent point. And for all I know, Kelly Marcel could be a phenomenal writer. We don't know. With time will tell. As you mentioned, 50 Shades was an adaptation. It's a little bit different. It's going to be an original story. So we'll see what becomes of this project.
Will time tell tales, Greg?
You know, if only there were a studio that could tell tales in video game form.
Or tell tales out of school.
That's right. Or if there were a feller that would pay you $10 to sing into his can.
Indeed.
That boy lives inside his own heart. Well, with that note, ladies and gentlemen, that concludes this edition of Hard Traveling Fanboys and this edition of Off the Page. Next week, we will be joined by our longtime friend and friend of the show, Jennifer Smith of Geek and Sassy.
Wouldn't you have to kill Jesse first?
Get yourself together, man. She will join.
You can't drop the Carl Childers on me.
I aim to kill you with it.
What you doing here, Cratchit?
Captain's log. Reckon it's star date.
Oh my.
I can't remember. Bible says a man ought not lie with another man. Reckon you all right, though.
Not funny, ha-ha, funny queer. Oh, God.
I like my biscuits with mustard.
French fried potatoes.
It's good. Rodney.
Okay. Oh, man. Let's just go ahead and wrap this up.
Yes, sir.
So,
next week we'll be joined by our friend Jennifer Smith.
Right.
To help us
count down our bottom five Walking Dead characters in any medium.
The worst of the worst. The Walking Dead characters that churn our very stomachs. And we'll be counting those characters down. And we're not limiting it to, as Nick mentioned, we're not limiting it to the show. We're not limiting it to the comics or the video game. We're encompassing all Walking Dead related media.
Right.
So we've got that coming your way. Following that, we've got a long book, Hunters, on more of the Walking Dead comic. What, volumes 3 and 4, I think, of the Walking Dead?
Well, it was supposed to be volumes 3 and 4, but we didn't get to 2 last year, so the plan is 2 and 3.
That's right.
Pretty short reads.
And then we'll close out the month with a hot take review of the season premiere of the Walking Dead. which will be out by that point. So we got a lot of Walking Dead related content for you just in time for Halloween. So hopefully you will enjoy all of that. Anything else we need to let the good people know about, Nick?
Not that I can think of, Greg, no.
Well, with that being said, mercifully, this show is coming to an end. Hopefully, I apologize, by the way, I've been under the weather, so my voice may have failed me a few times, but hopefully I'll feel better next week, and we'll see. And in the meantime, keep listening to all the great podcasts here at Place to Be Nation Pop, NBA Team, Lucha Undead, Glenn Butler Podcast, Our Spectacular, which is talking about the exciting new Star Trek Discovery show, which I have yet to watch, but I'm planning on catching the premiere episode at some point. And of course, all of our great comic book content and associated content. Geek and Sassy, killing it. Sellers Points. What else do we have there? Conversation Comics. And of course, David Sunday's Sunday Groove music podcast right here on PlayStation Pop.
I'm just going to call it Easy Like Sunday Morning, because that's what I, or Easy Like David Sunday, because that's what I wanted to call it all along. So I'm just going to call it that. Hell with his.
I'm really excited about you guesting on a music podcast, by the way.
That's never going to happen, Greg.
I think
if it does, we'll just call it the first ever Sunday Groove Pod Blast, because there's not going to be much to say about it.
What if David suddenly gets a strong interest in the Oak Ridge Boys catalog?
Well, now if he wants to talk a little American Made or Trying to Love Two Women, then maybe we can work something out. But until
Bobby
then,
Bobby Sue.
Well, Bobby Sue, yeah, that's what I'm talking about.
Bobby Sue. So we'll see what becomes of all that. But we do thank you for listening to Place to Be Nation Pod. We really appreciate the support. Hit us up. Let us know how we can fix things. Are you tired of hearing us quote Carl Childers and Ernest? And
we just started Carl Childers. You're not getting – that's going to be a recurring thing for a while, folks. Go ahead and prepare yourself for
yes.
that.
Oh, I, we can't go off the air yet without another impromptu lightning round question. So – even though we didn't do that last week, but did it the week before. So, in this case, Nick, we're having an all-earnest single elimination tournament.
Oh, here we go. Okay.
All right. We're going to do it in order of release, or what I think the order of release was.
Now, wait. But is the seeding? Okay.
The seeding is based on order of release.
What are the matchups? Explain
the matchups right now. And we're going to – you know what? I'm changing it up on the fly because I can. I'm not going to seed it based on that. I'm going to seed it based on my perceived popular power rankings of the films. Uh-huh. So the number one seed, I would say, is probably Ernest Goes to Camp.
Okay.
And it will be taking on the number four seed, Ernest Scared Stupid.
Okay.
And then we've got, of course, to me, what is the real main event matchup, which is Ernest Goes to Jail versus Ernest Saves Christmas.
Okay. There is no competition here. Ernest Goes to Camp trounces Ernest Scared Stupid.
Yes.
Ernest Saves Christmas trounces Goes to Jail.
Oh, that's ludicrous.
It's not ludicrous. It's not ludicrous, Greg. Anyway,
go ahead and finish your tournament.
And then Saves Christmas over Goes to Camp and is the ultimate champion.
Okay.
Of the Ernest universe.
Now listen, I can agree with you. Certainly, we're unanimous on Camp defeating Scared Stupid. No knock on Scared Stupid. Scared Stupid does a lot.
A little of a knock on Scared Stupid.
It does
just
a lot
a
right though. It does a lot right though. I mean, Miak.
Yeah.
But there's some bad stuff to it. But it certainly it was the zenith. It was the end. It was the culmination
yes.
of the Ernest.
You had clearly crested the hill and were heading downward
yep.
at that point.
But Goes to Camp wins that matchup. Now, in the real main event, I am taking Goes to Jail. I'm sorry,
of course
I just am. Goes to Jail.
That's fine.
Goes to Jail gave me Electro Ernest.
Greg, the great thing about this country is that you are entitled to your opinion, even if that opinion is wrong, quite frankly.
Well, my opinion happens to be right in this case.
No, it doesn't.
Which is that any movie that gives me Jim Varney playing two mirror versions of the same character is going to win out. So Goes to Jail defeats Saves Christmas. and moves on to the finals, where Goes to Jail defeats Goes to Camp. And the ultimate Ernest movie is Goes to Jail.
No, it Saves Christmas. It'll always be Saves Christmas.
Well, let's leave that to the listeners to decide. We'll throw up a poll with this episode if we can remember to do it, which
and it will be
won't.
A 3.5-inch poll, in case you were wondering.
And we'll let you users, you listeners, you players,
a Wetumpka infected 3.5-inch poll.
And we're gonna let you all vote on this Ernest tournament, the Ernament, if you will. And let us know.
Now, can you do a tournament as a poll? Wouldn't it just throw all four up and thus not really be a tournament?
No, we're not going to do that. We're going to put the two winners. We're going to go straight to the ultimate heart of the question here.
Wait a minute though, but then the problem becomes there may be some people who prefer goes to camp over both of those. Greg, you're not violating the true spirit of the Ernament already.
let me tell you about the Ernament. The Ernament was put together by us, correct?
Yes.
The Ernament was voted on by us, correct?
Yes, that's true.
This is a tiebreaker to determine the ultimate winner of the Ernament.
But you can't have – you're only letting them vote on one first-round matchup.
No. They're voting
because
between who's champion.
They're voting on Saves Christmas versus Goes to Jail, which
right.
was indeed a first-round matchup,
yes,
was it not?
Yes, it was. But both of us elected different champions, so our two champions are going head-to-head in the court of public opinion.
Greg, what does that matter? What does the court of public opinion matter? The
in
court of
case,
public opinion
means,
crowned Big Bang Theory the number one comedy
well,
in America.
And in this case, public opinion will crown Ernest Goes to Jail the winner of the Ernament.
That's fine. Goes to Jail very well could be the Big Bang Theory of Ernest films.
You don't need to sully the name of the Ernament by comparing it to Big Bang Theory, my friend. Anyway, vote in our poll if we can remember to put it up, which we probably won't, knowing us. So,
I'm not even going to pretend like that's a thing that might happen.
Nevertheless, let us know how we can improve the show. Let us know if you would like to purchase a Nevertheless t-shirt. If you would, we'll have it made very cheaply and then mark it up. Mm-hmm. So, with that being said, stay thirsty, my friends, and join us next week on The Hard. Where'd you get down the fiddle and you get Traveling down Fanboys. Kick off your shoes and you throw them on the floor. Dance in the kitchen till the morning light. Louisiana Saturday night. Waiting in the front yard, sitting on a log. A single shot rifle and a one-eyed dog. Yonder come our kinfolk in the moonlight. Louisiana Saturday night. Well, you get down the fiddle and you get down the bow. Kick off your shoes and you throw them in the floor. Dance in the kitchen till the morning light. Louisiana Saturday night. Jack, belly full of beer and a possum in a sack. 15 kids in the front porch light. Louisiana Saturday night. When the kinfolk leave and the kids get fed, me and my woman gonna slip off to bed. Have a little fun when we turn out the lights. Louisiana Saturday night. Well, you get down the fiddle and you get down the bow. Kick off your shoes and you throw them on the floor. Dance in the kitchen till the morning light. Louisiana Saturday night. Yeah, you get down the fiddle and you get down the bow. Kick off your shoes and you throw them on the floor. Dance in the kitchen till the morning light. Louisiana Saturday night. In the kitchen till the morning light, Louisiana Saturday night.